Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Jim.
Mark, do we have a special offer for our listeners?
We do at VRTrader.com. I want to say up front that I'm not a financial advisor, nor do I give financial advice. It's an educational newsletter, VRTrader.com, and we are offering 50% off for any of our newsletters with the promo code 2022HALFOFF, 2022HALFOFF, and you just insert that in the promo code section for any one of our many newsletters on our website.
Saw a headline, Goldman Sachs says recession is not inevitable. What makes them so optimistic?
Oh, gee, I don't know. I don't know if you want to believe Goldman Sachs' predictions. I remember when crude oil topped out back in 2007, they were predicting, you know, $200 a barrel or something, and it topped out at 140 and collapsed. Goldman Sachs, I'm not saying they're wrong all the time. They got one of the best traders, group of traders on the planet. I mean, if you look at their detail, their financial statements and stuff, I don't think they lose any money at all trading. You know, they're like almost a zero loss situation. So obviously on their trading, they're very good. In terms of their predictions that go public, tough call here. I mean, I'm not that optimistic, but, you know, maybe they know something we don't know, that suddenly, you know, the Fed's going to reverse their policy or something else is going on that's going to get everybody super excited. So at the moment, it's no comment. I just do my own work and I really don't pay much attention to it. If anything, when I hear big firms make big predictions, I tend to be a bit skeptical.
I always think they've got something up their sleeve, so they want you to think that because they're going to do something completely opposite.
I mean, where were they in November or October when the NASDAQ stocks were topping out, and we've had, you know, a crash in the high-tech names, like 35% type correction. So, I didn't hear any warnings about getting out of the market leaders like Apple and Microsoft and, you know, Netflix and Tesla and all those that have come down substantially. So, I guess that's reserved for the high-paying clients.
As we speak on Thursday, the U.S. markets have closed, again, negative. The NASDAQ for most of the day was positive, but right at the end of the day, they had a slight dip. Is high-tech dead?
Nothing is ever dead. You know, we've been through so many cycles in the market the last, 100 years. If you go back and look, generally speaking, unless we're having some dramatic change in the country, get invaded by China and we're suddenly a Chinese, protectorate or something. I mean, if we're who we are, markets always tend to come back. The question is, how much of a correction? Is it a 1987 event? Is it a 2008-9 event? You know, is it a 1929 event, which took many, many years, obviously, for us to recover? So I think there's too much financial engineering out there. You know, money printing, control of the market, the plunge protection team, which was inaugurated by Ronald Reagan in that executive order in 1988. I mean, there's so much stuff going on out there to pull the strings and make things happen or don't happen that, you can't be a long-term pessimist based on history is what I'm saying. There are going to be short-term negative periods, and the question is, how negative is this current period? Is it ending now, as some people think, since we've already had, substantial correction, or can it last through the year into next year? So that's the big question. I'm a little more on the bear side. I've been right up to this point, But, you know, we just look at the numbers, you know, every day. We were playing the short side with the inverse ETFs and been pretty successful here in our last 8 or 9 trades, catching, you know, some nice moves to the downside. We actually sold them at a profit yesterday. That was one of the most recent trades. We had several, but when the Dow was off 1,100 points yesterday, we said, that's enough. Let's take a trade. Let's see what happens here. So, you know, you got a lot of forces at work out there, and, you know, it seemed to be overdone. So we're just going to have to watch it here, you know, the next couple of days. You know, the U.S. dollar started to back off a little bit. It was way overdone to the upside, you know, like big parabolic type move. And the charts said to me, you know, that that could start a little bit of a correction in the dollar, which would be bullish for stocks since they've been moving in an opposite direction for a while. Also maybe good for the commodities and gold. And the fear of the market crash has put money into the bond market. We've actually seen the 30-year bond rally. Not that the Fed is doing anything with it because they don't control the private market, but investors have been bidding up the Treasury bonds. As a flight to safety. But, you know, when they bid up the Treasury bonds, that sort of implies lower interest rates. So the free market, not the manipulated market, which is the Federal Reserve, you know, start putting money into bonds. And in theory, that should help at some point temper the bearish view of the Federal Reserve and maybe even delay some of their interest rate hikes. That's sort of an optimistic interpretation. But investors keep bidding up the bonds. That drives interest rates down.
Now, it's been quite some time since we've had a serious, serious drop in stocks. A lot of young investors have never seen a major drop. What's that do to the markets when you have a lot of young traders in there who are permanently optimistic no matter what the numbers tell them?
Well, I congratulate them because they have time on their side. You know, if you're my age, you know, I'm already in my early 70s. I don't have the time that, for example, my youngest son, who's in his mid-20s, has. So that 50 years difference, obviously a lot could happen, and I would say remain positive. And, you know, of course, they may not have the experience of investing. You know, they may just get caught at the top and get awfully depressed when they see a 20 to 50% correction in some of their stock. That's why the theory of dollar cost averaging has always been a pretty good one over the decades, where you just buy a fixed amount every month, regardless of the market's up or down, and over time you end up, you know, paying high at some points and paying and getting bargains at other times, and it sort of averages out for you versus putting it all in at one time. Many of the young people, though, of course, are in the high-tech names in the cryptocurrency space, which got nailed here the last few weeks, but we've seen this happen before, you know, in the last couple, 3 years, so it should be no surprise to them that we get these huge moves. And, you know, I wouldn't discount that many of them didn't do well. I mean, some of these kids, some that I've been in touch with, are trading those things and making money and selling and buying back on the dips and, you know, using a little common sense that things don't go up forever. So, anyway, bottom line in response to your question is, history says you have to be an optimist, and if it changes this time, I mean, that would be the end of the country. I mean, that would be the end of the markets, because markets don't go down forever and they don't go up forever.
What's going on with gold right now?
Little uptick here because real oversold. Some of the cycles indicated we should be rallying in the second quarter. And also the dollars, I just mentioned, start to back off the last few days. And since there's a it doesn't always work. There are times where it doesn't work, where they can't go in the same direction at the same time. But generally speaking, they go in inverse direction. So a pullback in the dollar here has boosted gold, and it upticked a little bit today, Thursday. And if the dollar, you know, for whatever reason, has hit a big top, which I can't predict is the case or not. I mean, the chart says it needs to pull back, and whether it's a big starting of a big pullback or a little, we're just going to have to monitor it day to day. But the more the dollar comes down, the more we should see resurgence in gold, and for that matter, commodities, and for that matter, crypto too, because it seemed like the gold market and the crypto market were going together. So let's just see how it plays out. So, you know, we're long, you know, some of the gold ETFs here, and keeping our fingers crossed that maybe we get a little bit more of a rally and maybe even a bigger one. But I'm not making any big picture predictions that we're going back to 2080 in the price in the U.S. dollar, or going back down to 900 or 1,000. I'm just sort of taking the swings as they unfold. The big problem with the gold market, and I'm probably the only one out there talking about it because nobody else mentions it, but, you know, it's one of the most manipulated markets on the planet, with the governments being the manipulators. And there's a lot of anecdotal and real evidence supporting that. So if you do a little research and you go to my friends at GATA.org, that have been Bill Murphy, who has for 20 years researched this area with all kinds of documentation. So in effect, what I'm saying is the powers that be put a lid on gold and silver for political and economic reasons. And if they didn't, you know, these markets would be significantly higher than they are today. But for their own judgment and their own plans, they decided that a high gold and silver market wasn't good for, you know, their strategy. So they've done their best to suppress it. So that's the unfortunate part. But in a free market, I think gold and silver would be much, much higher than they are today.
Right. The government has no interest in investigating gold manipulation because they're the biggest manipulators.
Correct. And there's evidence behind that. And again, you'd have to go to GATA.org, which is a site that for 20 years has been publishing all kinds of documentation regarding this event. And you know, it's been admitted by public officials, you know, and many of the excerpts that you'll read over there. So it's just something that's going on. By the same token, as I mentioned a few moments ago, what Ronald Reagan created, the Working Group of Financial Markets, which is called the Plunge Protection Team, sort of an alternate term for the same thing. And the whole purpose of that was to support the equity markets and for the government to come in and do what they needed to do when they chose to do it. So it's all public knowledge that the government has the ability, and, you know, I don't have the documents in front of me to prove what day they do it or when they don't do it, but, you know, they're active in the markets, and we know even that's not even the Federal Reserve, which on its own has been doing crazy stuff like buying bonds and stocks of individual companies, which is not really talked about hardly at all in the press. Some of it came out during the Freedom of Information disclosure process, where we found out some of the funny things that the Fed was doing, which is, you know, we think they just move interest rates, but apparently they're stock speculators or bond speculators on a certain level too. So there's so much stuff going on, Jim. I mean, it's just wild out there. I mean, where we think there are rules, there are no rules. Where you think it's a balanced, even market, free market, you find out it really isn't. So we just got to play the game. I mean, it's a game, and we do our best to track it. And, you know, I was correctly bearish here for this recent decline, as listeners know. And, you know, I'm just concerned that some of our numbers, you know, suggest the possibility that it could get much, much worse. I hope I'm wrong, and things can change. So let's just take it a day at a time here. But it's very interesting markets. And, you know, you have to be optimistic that you can make money no matter what the direction the market goes. I mean, yeah, we owned a few stocks, but we also were in the inverse indexes, and we were happy to see a crash yesterday because we were, you know, positioned for that. And, you know, if you're going to buy an ETF for the spider, the S&P 500, for example, on the long side, why can't you buy an inverse spider when you think conditions have changed and we're in a correction or going possibly into a recession, and just position some of your money to make money on the downside? I mean, that's why these things were created. And it's sort of foolish, you know, not to take advantage of them. But at least, I suppose, you can go to cash if you're not willing to play the downside. But we found over time that stocks seem to drop faster than they go up. And if you can catch an inverse position in one of these ETFs, you know, they do work out nicely for you in a quicker time frame.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, what's going on with Bitcoin?
Well, it had a big correction. It ran up. I can't tell you fundamentally why it would come down for the same reason. You know, you can argue there are all kinds of reasons. The dollar was strong and people needed to liquidate positions to raise money. You know, they say this is why even gold can come down in a bear market, because you know, it's a function of these positions being hedged or margined, or people need to raise capital and they throw the baby out with the bathwater. So when there's liquidation, everything comes down. So I would suspect, because the overall equity market came down for fear of recession, you know, Federal Reserve, Ukraine, and we can run through a whole list of possibilities out there. Taiwan, you know, the whole reason why people were selling, supply chain shortages, the whole, we can make all kinds of excuses. You know, some people had to raise money and they start selling their cryptos, and one thing led to another. So I just think that all the markets are moving together is really the answer, and that says that they're going to reverse and go back up again. And the question is, have they already bottomed here? And you know, we actually went long a couple of them, the ETFs for Ethereum and Bitcoin, thinking that maybe we hit a little trading bottom here. So we're keeping our fingers crossed since they came down so dramatically. But like anything else, we know where our stops are and where we get out if we're wrong. So, yeah, I love when they kill them. I mean, I love when they drop, like they did in the last couple of days. I don't know if you've been watching the news, but like, Walmart, got murdered. I think it went to a lower low or had a more serious correction than it had way back in 1987. And Target, another big retailer, came down. And I hear after the close today, Ross Stores also got murdered. So I love when they kill them, because that just prevents bargain basement opportunities in these companies, which I don't think are going away so fast. I just think they had some bad news and the street overreacted. So, you know, I'm not saying that you have to buy them tomorrow morning. Maybe it takes a little time for these things to base out, whatever. But, you know, when you see a stock drop 50%, that's a quality company. you're never going to pick the bottom and you're never going to pick the top. So I think, I think you got to take advantage of these type of events.
And a lot of people, too, Walmart and Target would rely on people buying summer fashions. Well, I've got a closet full of stuff I never got to wear for 2 years because we were locked down.
Well, business did slow for them.
Yeah.
The supply issues, something. I mean, I'm not saying there weren't reasons that maybe the stocks were overpriced to begin with. You know, they ran up too much, too much positive expectations. But, you know, you look at the charts, you see the giant corrections. And when the stock, you know, corrects half of its price really quickly, and it's not a fly-by-night name. I mean, I think believe Walmart's the largest retailer in the world. I mean, obviously, they're going to come back at some point. So do you buy it when it's down 50%, or you have to wait till it's 70% down? And who knows if it's going to get down that low. So I think people panic. And even though I might not be so happy with the markets and think there could still be some risk, I mean, sometimes a situation like this gets way overdone. I mean, when I go over to Walmart, they still look pretty packed to me. So same thing with Costco and other big name people. So essentially, Walmart and Costco are big grocery stores. You know what I mean? You know, people still have to eat and shop. So I don't think the grocery store business is going out of business. Otherwise, we're going to have starvation in this country, in this world, right?
Mark, on the geocosmic front, next year is supposed to be a peak for solar flares. We always talk about the Carrington event back in 1859 that melted down the only electronic system on Earth, which was telegraph lines. And I'm told the biggest threat perhaps isn't on Earth, but up in space, because we rely so much on satellites.
Right, right. In fact, there's a flare that was reported today. It's a website called spaceweather.com, and they said there's a big sunspot, and they call it AR3014. It's some unstable, they call it beta gamma delta magnetic field that harbors energy, and they said it has to have some effect on us today or tomorrow, since it's facing toward the Earth versus against, the whether that's a Carrington type situation or not. We're just naive, I mean, about the geocosmic. You know, we can talk all day about it. I mean, suddenly a volcano goes off, or tsunami wipes out and kills tens of thousands of people, and, crop shortages, all kinds of stuff because of climate or atmospheric changes. We can talk about asteroids. In fact, on that spaceweather.com website, they have a whole list of all the asteroids, near-Earth asteroids, they call them, and they talk about they're tracking 2,200 potentially hazardous asteroids on the website. These means they're tracked scientifically. And, of course, they're a few million miles away and whatever, but, you know, one day one of these things is going to break away unless we have the ability to deter it. So So, you know, all kinds of stuff. You know, you sit and worry about something that is never could happen, but suddenly we see these outlier events. In just the last few years, there was that meteorite or small asteroid that's exploded over Russia and, you know, caused a lot of damage, a super explosion that came out of nowhere. Where was the warning for that? I mean, supposedly we should have been warned that it was entering the atmosphere. So, we monitor that stuff. We talk about it. We try to stay on top of it. We can't prevent it. But it opens up our eyes and ears a little bit to, you know, there's more to understanding the way of the world and the financial markets and watching financial television. You know what I mean? They're not going to talk about the Carrington event or the risk of that too often until, I suppose, it happens and it's too late. And we can't do anything to change it. I mean, we can't control the sun and so forth. You know, the big story this past week, we mentioned it last week briefly, was the Congress UFO hearings. And the first, that was the first hearing in 50 years in Congress, even discussing the subject. So I thought it was fascinating because really nothing was said that we didn't already know. And there is, you know, there are some questions at that meeting, which I was glad to hear. I mean, there's some speculation that, you know, and I've talked about this for a long time, that some monies have been siphoned out for secret projects that we're not told about. And it's been my view for the longest time that not only did do UFOs exist, but we've actually reverse engineered some of that technology in the past. And some of the things that we might be seeing in the sky could be our own craft that we've created from that technology. And that's why they may be reluctant to talk about it. So, you know, these things are there. They're photographed. They showed some at the congressional hearings on Tuesday. And they're scratching their head, you know, what they are. Well, you know, people that are talking there either don't have all the information or they're told what they're not supposed to talk about. But, you know, this is a, these things have been cited for hundreds of years. And, you know, this even, there was speculation that some of these could be time travel vehicles coming back from the future. I just think it's either, you know, really some extraterrestrial stuff or maybe a lion's share of it is our own stuff up there that we're not talking about. But technology that we're seeing in these videos is certainly more advanced than anything. I mean, I think it's the greatest story of our time. I mean, really, if this, that technology exists, forget extraterrestrials, if it's our own technology and we can do stuff like that. I mean, I've read reports that some of these craft could, you know, be on the moon in 10 minutes. I mean, they have extraordinary capabilities beyond anything that we're told about or see. And, I've been told, you know, through sources, again, these are just anecdotal contacts of mine over the decades, that we've had a base on the moon for a long time. That's why we haven't been there. The astronauts supposed to start going back a year or two, supposedly. But we've been doing stuff secretly for a long time, and we're just not being told about it. That's why I think it's the greatest story, because it's unfortunate that mankind could benefit so much more by using this technology and making it available to everybody. I mean, why should we get on an airplane that takes us, you know, 5-6 hours to cross the continental United States, for example, if there's technology to get us there in 20 minutes or 10 minutes. You know what I mean? Why do we have to suffer from old technology and not be made available to us? So apparently it's military concerns and so forth. So, you know, there's a reason why that hearing occurred, by the way, Jim. I mean, why did it happen this past Tuesday? So I think a lot of, you know, being prepared for something. You know what I mean? This is not just an accident. I mean, maybe there's going to be revelation made of some kind, some of the secret stuff that Obama had released under the, before he left the presidency, thousands of pages of UFO documents. A lot of it was didacted, you know, blacked out where you couldn't read everything. I mean, there's some real serious stuff. And in a way, it makes the Ukraine situation, it makes the Federal Reserve situation, it makes everything small and really unimportant if these stories are true, if there's actually extraterrestrial contact and negotiations and all kinds of stuff that's been rumored over the years, or whether we just have advanced technology that we're just not talking to people about. So I think it's the greatest story of our time. And unfortunately, you know, when people listen to this broadcast, they say they want to know what the market is doing. You know, well, you know, it's the stage of my life. And for many years, I just enjoy the subject a lot more. It's more fun. And maybe I'll get lucky one day and see one of these craft in my backyard and, that's one way to go, huh, Jim? When they invite me in, I just say adios to the world and the stock market, and I end up on Mars, right?
Well, they don't seem to mind giving you a ride, but I'm not too keen on the anal probe.
Yeah, the ones people that have been abducted and they supposedly do all this stuff, right? That's true. Was it Betty and Barney Hill? The famous case back in the 1960s. I forget the name of the book. You know, that started the whole abduction, series, and we've heard more and more about. So, I went to this conference. I don't want to hold up the interview much longer, but there was, on the History Channel, on cable TV, there's a show called Ancient Aliens, and they talk about, you know, the history of the planet and how we might have been influenced by visitors in ancient times, and a lot of religion may be really visitors versus actually, you know, religious figures, and instead of angels, it's actually aliens. They go into very interesting stuff, but they have held some periodic conferences, and I attended one in Pasadena, California, but it must have been about 3-4 years ago, it was before the COVID thing, and I mean, there were these hundreds of people there talking about how what they saw and how they were abducted. And on, so either we had a room of hundreds of crazy people, or there's always a seed of truth in some of these, events, even if you're a disbeliever completely. So it was, it's eye-opening when you really attend one of these events and see hundreds or thousands of people that tell you something that you don't really hear day-to-day in the media. So there's definitely something going on big, and maybe the congressional hearings past Tuesday and the other releases is the government warming us up for some dramatic event of some kind, like, we just discovered a base on the moon and it's not ours or something. Mm-hmm. And then the world has to start up, reorienting their thinking that there's other people in the other creatures in the universe besides those here on Earth, and our presence here may not be all that important as we all think we are. I mean, we're here like a will-o'-the-wisp, with the short lifetimes we have. We're here and we're gone. And it's sort of meaningless on the scale of the universe, So anyway, interesting stuff. Thank you for allowing me to rant and rave. But as far as the markets are concerned, I'm still on a sort of a bear mode here. I think, we're not done yet. And this could be more than just a short-term comment, through 2022 into next year. We could have a lot of we could have some wild rides, some nice rallies, certainly, but I don't know if it's all over yet. So I would be careful for a while unless you're trading.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. If you have any questions for Mark or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.